All right, shut up. And welcome to another episode of the Dynasty Trades HQ podcast.
Welcome.
Brought to you by the Dynasty Football Network and DynastyFootballFactory.com. My name is Michael Sipes. You can find me on Twitter at FFBlitz. And I'm here with my partners, Jeremy Broen.
You know it, baby. At DFF underscore madman.
And Shane Manila.
Hey, I'm at I'm at DFF underscore Shane. And fun fact, just real quick, this is germane of nothing and apropos of nothing. And I just wanted to use both those words. So someone was going back and forth with a dude he was trading with and showed like a tweet where the poll results were, and my name was in there with a bunch of other names, and he's like, "Who the f- is Shane DFF underscore Shane?" So I guess he's not a listener of our show.
Oh my god! All right, so we're starting off with quite a few bleeps that I need to do for the show. So that's awesome.
But we got a great show tonight.
Yeah, we do. We've got two guests from the same show tonight.
Yeah, and we haven't told either of them that they're on. No,
that's not yet. Anyway,
look, we do this show on the seat of our pants. We don't let the guests do that too. Well, or maybe we do. I mean, they're going to be on in 3 minutes. So, they're from SaturdayToSundayFootball.com, and they also have a podcast too, right, Shane?
That they do. It's also called Saturday to Sunday,
and it's Paul Perticchese.
Yes. And Matt Caraccio.
Sweet. Yeah, they're going to come
and
on.
We know how good I am at pronouncing names, so we'll just get the verification when they jump on with us.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be awesome. And they're going to come on talking about Devy and rookies and all that, which is this is the perfect time of the year for these guys as guests of our show. That's what cares about right now is what they're going to do with their rookie picks. We got the combine coming up. We got the draft. I mean, we have so much coming up. But we do have to speak about our friends over at RotoSurance.com. We don't really have any injuries to talk about, though, right, Shane?
Well, there is the one. So if you were to go ahead and draft Alex Smith.
Ooh, don't do
there's,
it.
There's a definite chance that he's going to miss 9 games next year because he can't walk.
Well, there's a possible chance he's going to miss his leg, but if he gets it, you think he's going to play football again? I don't. I mean, the Redskins are going to need a quarterback soon, man. Like,
he's done.
Is RotoSurance going to let you?
So say you would have drafted an Alex Smith next year because he made a miraculous recovery and also had an arm transplant. So you're like, yeah, I'm taking this guy. And then he were to miss 9 games. Guess what? Roto Insurance would have you covered.
Yeah, and it's rotosurance.com, rotosurance.com. And what's funny is I wonder how it works with somebody like Alex Smith right now. Do they have different tiers of how much they charge you for the insurance?
Yeah, that's a pre-existing condition, so I'm pretty sure you can't draft him. So don't draft him. Don't draft him just to prove the point. But if you do draft someone that's good, and they get injured and miss 9 games, you can save 20% on that insurance. So I suggest as soon as your startup is finished, the next thing you do is open up another tab on your little computer there.
Yep.
And go on rotosurance.com. Get 20% off your player's insurance using the code DynastyTradesHQ all in caps.
Yeah, and I think this is the first time we've talked about rotosurance.com without mentioning Sammy Watkins.
He didn't play this week.
Hey, but trade alert. I did a trade for Sammy Watkins after you were talking last week about wanting to trade for Sammy Watkins and everything. In our Devy League, I traded a freshman Devy player and a second-round pick for Sammy Watkins. So I was happy about that.
Oh, I already like it. Who was the player?
Jalen Reagor. And he's a freshman.
He's a ways off. He'll be starting. He'll be in the 2028 draft. Just kidding.
Yeah, and it was a second round pick in a Devy league where we have 120 Devy players, so it's kind of depleted, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm in that league.
Yeah, you're in that league. Yeah, we did an awesome trade in that league as well that we talked about on our Patreon account tonight.
Oh my god, people should become patrons. We got the patron podcast. Acceptable, but yeah, we made a huge Superflex Devy 2 tight end premium. I don't even know what other. It's not IDP because that's weird.
Yeah, but it's a huge Devi league. I mean, every team has 10 Devi players, so there's 120 Devi players. And yeah, we talked about our trade on the Patreon account, and I did want to bring it up when we have Paul and Matt on the show just to hear what they have to say. So I think right now, which is perfect, actually, that we're going to have Paul and Matt on the show. Why don't we hear from the Scouting Academy? Because that's a big deal thing for them as well. So here's the Scouting Academy.
Scout NFL football like a pro. Invest in yourself and get a degree in player evaluation and assessment from the Scouting Academy. They've educated NFL GMs, personnel directors, and dozens of NFL scouts. Enroll today and you'll watch the same game tape NFL coaches watch. You'll learn to look past the metrics with position-by-position analysis. This is a time-tested curriculum, a chance to learn from the NFL execs and coaches. Sign up today and get a Dynasty Football Factory exclusive discount for limited time only. Save $50 when you sign up at DynastyFootballFactory.com.
Oh, so yeah, the Scouting Academy is awesome. Go up on our website, and there's a cool link there. Save yourself $50 for the next semester. And actually, I don't know if both of our guests have gone, but I know once I scroll up, I'll stop sounding like an idiot, and I will see that Paul actually writes for the Scouting Academy or works for them. Matt. Okay, so that was awful. Matt, so I didn't even put it under the right person's name.
So yeah, there's Paul and then there's Matt on the show. Shit.
Okay, all right. First of all, it's already gone off the rails and we're totally in the wrong place. So yes, let's welcome our guests, Matt and Paul, from the Saturday to Sunday football.com and the podcast, Saturday Sunday Podcast. How you doing, guys?
Doing well. Glad to be here. Really looking forward to it. Talking some prospects with you. Really excited for it.
Yeah, I echo the same things. I feel 100% the same way. I really can't wait to get started, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So whatever Shane just said, let's just push it to a side. Which one of you two guys did the Scouting Academy?
that would actually be me. I actually have been doing the Scouting Academy. I did it for several years. It's a pretty intense program. I mean, you get out of it kind of what you put into it. Now I'm one of the people in the background that helps Dan work out different reports that are submitted to help him kind of with different aspects of providing feedback in different ways on different writings that people do. So I'm a silent coach in the background every once in a while, obviously working with Dan. Awesome. Really to try to help, you know, because I learned a lot from Dan and a lot from that academy, and really just can't say enough great things about it. It really is a great thing for somebody who, if you're interested in scouting or if you're interested in just expanding your knowledge, it's really awesome. So I'm really proud to be a part of the academy.
That's pretty cool. Paul, did you do it yet or no?
No, something that I'd really enjoy and love getting into, just from the feedback that Matt and, you know, so much of the knowledge that Matt has shared. It's definitely something that, you know, I have on my to-do list that I'd love to get around to, just to kind of, you know, further my knowledge in terms of evaluating, you know, and just basically continuing the evolving process. Because, you know, Matt and I have been doing Saturday, Sunday for, I think we're going almost on 4 years now, and it's just never ending. It's a learning process. You know, as two people who are educators, you know, we see the value so much in just constantly evolving our process, you know, and something like the Scouting Academy really could, you know, I think, you know, benefit me a lot to, you know, either further hone my skills in terms of crafting, you know, and analyzing players and prospects. So it is something that hopefully down the line I enjoy and would love that opportunity to do.
That's pretty cool. You mentioned that you guys have been doing the site for, what'd you say, 4 years? Is it just the two of you, or is there anybody else over there doing it with you guys?
Well, right now, our third partner is kind of behind the scene. He's our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano. And honestly, without him, we wouldn't have the podcast. We wouldn't have the website. He is the man that makes all the magic happen in terms of editing the podcast, in terms of putting in drops and reads, in terms of, you know, handling any of the technological things. Obviously, when we started it 4 years ago, Nick Whalen was a part, was one of the original founders with us. He moved on from us. And then also, we had Bill Ladin, join us for a while, and then he had some obligations away from, you know, football and fantasy football that, you know, unfortunately he wasn't able to stay apart with a part of Saturday Sunday with us. But then we've had a bunch of contributors along the way that have helped us, like Doug Green from DLF, Brandon Jones, Eric Coleman, you know, so we've had some other people kind of help us out along the way, and without them we would definitely wouldn't be where we are.
You know, you mentioned Bill Latin was there. So do you, so you guys focus on IDP as well as offense, or is there one, because I know Shane doesn't care about IDP and everything, but when you're doing all your Devy talk and everything that you do on your website, is it for all positions and all players?
No. So we mostly hone in on the offensive skill players around draft season. And then post draft, we will do some IDP stuff. Usually we'll bring on our defensive expert is more Doug Green. So he usually joins us for some of the draft night podcasts to kind of give the perspective from the defensive prospects. I'll dabble in, you know, studying those guys and, you know, really familiarize myself with those guys. But in terms of hardcore analysis, we usually bring guests on to do the IDP component of it, you know, leading into the draft and after the draft in terms of, you know, some IDP rookie ranks.
If they really focused heavily on IDP, do you think I'd listen to them?
No, right? But I listen. Listen, we all know what you think about IDP, but there's other people like myself who do like IDP. So I just wanted to ask them if they focus on it at all. That's all.
Okay, I like it. I don't love it. It's
Their show's awesome. So there's a little bit of IDP sprinkled in, but their show's awesome. It doesn't suck. So there's not a lot of IDP.
Like, you know what though? Like you guys are mentioning like exactly what we love so much. I mean, we're all passionate fans of the game, just like you guys. And if we could do it, if we really had the resources to do it, I think Paul and I would jump on the opportunity to be able to handle more. But the reality is like when you guys, just like when you guys are started doing this podcast, like you pick a side, so to speak, and you end up driving home a single point to try to at least have a starting point for a discussion with people. And then you see how it moves and builds and evolves over time. And I know Paul and I geek out over every aspect of football beyond just the skill players. And yet sometimes like we're sitting there, we're like, man, I really like to talk about that defensive end or that offensive tackle that we just saw and talk about what they did at the Senior Bowl. But the reality is, it's just like sometimes you're just like, man, I got to get through 5 hours of tape right now just to see the rest of the Senior Bowl and listen to everybody talk about the same player for 25 minutes, because that's kind of sometimes how it goes. And it's, but I could tell you, we are right there with you guys. If we could do it, oh man, if we could do it, we would love to.
That's cool. You know, and it's funny, you mentioned the Senior Bowl, and that was one of the things we were going to talk about with having you guys on the show today. We wanted to know, like, what did you guys feel like? Who were the winners and the losers that came out of the Senior Bowl?
Well, you know what? I guess I'll start with the wide receivers just because I spend so much time watching the Senior Bowl from an evaluative perspective, and I've been doing it for a while, and I know Paul spends just as much time, you know, placed in front of our DVRs, kind of look at these different guys. And you know, I mean, I think at the wide receiver position, I think, you know, for specifically, I think a lot of people, you know, wanted to see what this group really brought to the table. And for me, I think Terry McLaurin was a big winner. I think there was a lot to like about his game. And it really did drive me back to the tape because, you know, we're a two-man operation along with Dave. And, you know, the three of us together, Paul and I watching a lot of the film, like you don't get a chance to hit on all the guys that could potentially be, you know, draft eligible prospects that have all this talent in the world. You just don't have that time, you know, to dig in. And Terry McLaurin, this is a way that we kind of catch up when we need to. And a guy like McLaurin kind of, you know, jumps off the page to you in those practices because of just really what he was able to do, what he was able to do in tight spaces, what he was able to do in different routes. You just saw that sensitivity to everything around him. He was just able to really do so much. He was a winner for me. Hunter Renfrow continues to be a winner for me. I won't give up on him. I know people are very limited about what his high upside is, but I think upside is a very nebulous thing. Upside to me is like, you know, what could happen if I could win the lottery tomorrow. There's upside in my being alive tomorrow. Tremendous upside being alive tomorrow. You know, I mean, whether or not it's realized, who knows? I mean, you know, I saw, I think it was Brad Kelly from the Draft Network, who's great, great, great guy, put out, you know, Wayne Grabet as a, you know, as a comp for him. And, you know, and I think that Hunter Renfrow, unfortunately, is a guy who goes under the radar, and yet he might be one of the most productive and consistent players, you know, year in and year out for the next 10 years. I know it doesn't translate to fantasy, But what does that even mean right now? I mean,
it could. Aaron Thielen went under the radar too.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the whole thing. So, I mean, I'm sorry not to belabor this point, but Hunter Renfro was a big winner for me. Terry McLaurin was a big winner for me. I really also liked, I thought specifically, my goodness, I'm just name escapes me.
Penny Hart?
Yes, thank you, Paul. Penny Hart, I thought he was fantastic as well. And then also, I mean, at the quarterback position, you know, I mean, that was just a random position that you only get glimpses, and you don't really get a tremendous amount of time to really watch them. There's not a lot of exposures that are useful to go through in terms of what I see. But I really did like, I liked kind of what Jared Stidham showed again. I still pretend to, I still stay with him. I'm not totally sold down the river. I know it's been a terrible Auburn career. I know it's been terrible. And I'm willing to concede it's been horrendous compared to what I thought it could be. But I still kind of burn a candle for him and hope that he finds the situation, because people forget, man, when he came out with Josh Rosen, you saw his high school film. He was throwing darts all over the field, over the field, from different platforms, off platform, outside of the pocket, moving off structure, in structure. I mean, he was adapting in the moment, creating on his feet. I mean, he was just outstanding coming out of high school, goes to Baylor, looks the same, doesn't work out. Obviously, tremendous things go on at Baylor, and then we end up at Auburn, where I just don't know how that happened, knowing what Gus Malzahn was as a coach in terms of his philosophy and how he saw football. But I still burn a candle for him. And I really liked Foster Moreau. I've loved Foster Moreau at LSU. He was a guy who jumped out at me at the spring practices. So those were several guys that kind of, in my eyes, kind of won, so to speak. But Paul, I mean, I'll throw it to you, because I know you were, me and you, we were texting each other at like 12 a.m. We were like, did you see that route? I saw that route. And I want to know, because I know he watches all that stuff as well. Paul, what did you see? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a couple of those wide receivers right there with you in terms of who won. I'll add a couple more wide receivers to that. One big name guy, Deebo Samuel. Obviously, he came there as the most highly regarded offensive prospect, not besides the quarterbacks, and he lived up to the hype. I've been saying since last summer, if you like DJ Moore, you gotta love Deebo Samuel. And I think he went there, and to be honest with you, I even think he's a better pure route runner than DJ Moore. DJ Moore, though, is a little bit raw and a little bit unrefined in terms of his route running. I think Deebo Samuel is more refined. He can get in and out of his breaks quicker. You know, when he came there rocked up at like 216 pounds as well. My guess is maybe 210 is more of his ideal playing weight, but I don't think he had any bad weight on him whatsoever. I think Deebo is squarely in the mix in the top 45 or top 50 picks in the NFL draft, and somewhere in that, you know, pick 7 to pick 14 in, you know, rookie drafts, I think is probably the range. Obviously, landing spot always matters, an opportunity. And then a couple under the radar wide receivers, you know, Matt mentioned Penny Hart. You know, I'll throw Andy Isabella in there out of UMass. He had 113 receptions this year. You know, he's going to test really well athletically, probably better than a guy like Hunter Renfro, maybe even better than Penny Hart. Isabella's a guy who can, you know, really good route runner, super fast, a good agility, elusive in the open field. But he's going to also test well in the 40, which I think is going to go a long way in terms of some NFL observers. So I thought he had a good week. And then Keelan Doss, another wide receiver out of UC Davis. Anyone who watched a game or watched
that's
a practice.
That's who I forgot, by the way. That was who got me, Paul.
Anyone who watched a game and watched the practices, Daniel Jeremiah was raving about him and kept comping him to Keenan Allen. And if you really watch enough Keenan Allen and then was watching Keelan Doss, their movement, how they play and how they win, you know, obviously Keelan Doss coming from UC Davis is going to have a drastic step up in competition. But if he tests well at the combine, he could be one of those guys, you know, that ends up going in like round 3 or early round 4. And he could be a guy that is really productive, you know, coming from a small school. Apparently he had opportunities to kind of transfer up into a better program, but he kind of wanted to stay where he was, you know, and kind of make a little bit of a legacy there and kind of help out the program, you know. So I commend him for that. So it's going to be interesting to see how he tests. So those were a couple winners, you know. On the flip side of it, a couple guys that, you know, at the wide receiver position, I've never been a big fan of David Sills out of West Virginia. I know the production is elite. I get it. You know, it's gaudy stats. So for people who are into, you know, market share, you know, and all that stuff, you know, David Sills is going to pop off the page at you. But I just have concerns in terms of his ability to create separation, his vertical speed. I don't think he's going to be able to always win at the catch point like he did in college, and that's all he was really asked to do. I actually think Gary Jennings, his teammate, looked better in the practices and in the game this week. You know, so I think, you know, Sills is someone who I think, you know, I still walked away with some question marks. And then Jalen Smith out of Louisville, he looked significantly worse than when I watched him on film last summer. I thought last summer when I watched him on film, he was a round five, round six guy. I'm not sure if he's not an undrafted free agent at this point and is not even a guy who's going to be drafted in this year's draft. And, you know, maybe a lot of his stats previously were a product of Lamar Jackson. And now I'm not sure he even gets picked.
You know what? One of the things while you guys are saying all these winners and losers, I was thinking about it. We've talked for months now where a lot of people in the Dynasty community believe that this is one of the lesser rookie classes than we've had in the last couple of years. So a lot of people recommend trading away rookie picks. And you guys have done a lot of research on all these players. Do you believe the hype or non-hype that everybody has on this draft class? Do you think it's a bad draft class or is there really good players that people just don't understand?
You know what? I'll throw out a couple of thoughts and then I'll pass it over to Paul. I mean, for me, my initial thought is that, you know, knowing what the 2020 draft class could be or the 2019 draft class and future draft class could be, I think it comes down to that's really it's very much affected and shaped by what we do in fantasy football, in my opinion.
Right.
I don't think that this particular draft class is lacking of talent per se. I think that if you look at through your fantasy lens, you have a tremendous stable of running backs coming up soon. And I think people are clamoring to try to get that position. I mean, running backs that are going to contribute in both the passing game and running game. From DeAndre Swift, Najee Harris is way better than people think. He's not getting enough love. The Cam Akers of the world. And we could go on and on. But you got versatile running backs, guys that you kind of already see those kind of, you know, those kind of ghosts or kind of specters in the future of like, could they be the next Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara type players and do that in the NFL? So I think people are very much clamoring for that as well as for, you know, some of the quarterbacks that are coming out. I mean, I argued that the freshman class that came in last year was probably the best freshman class of quarterbacks that I've ever seen with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, who we have yet to see. And people are starting to think down the road in terms of those players. And even at the wide receiver positions, the Amon-Ra St. Browns, the Justin Shorters and the Terrace Marshalls and the, you know, T. Higgins and the Jerry Judys and the Justin Rosses, people are looking at all these things and saying, you know, hey, you know, these guys could be potentially game changing. Let's get rid of everything. But in this particular class, and I think Paul can speak to this very eloquently, you know, when we go and look at the tight end position, when we go and look at what there is at the running back position, and even at the wide receiver position, there's tight end might be one of the strongest positions in this class. Running back is not anything to sniff at. I mean, Josh Jacobs is in there. I know we're all falling in love with Josh Jacobs and we're tripping over ourselves to making him the number one running back, but you still got the David Montgomerys of the world. Damian Harris is no slouch. I mean, you have players, Rodney Anderson. I mean, if he stays healthy, Rodney Anderson was my number one back. That's how, I mean, I thought he was tremendous and now he gets hurt. And now we got to consider that you have wide receivers like Cody Thompson. Cody Thompson at the Shrine game was by far the most explosive wide receiver at the practices that I saw in the images that, you know, football game plan, and that's Emery Hunt over there that put together for everybody. You know, he didn't participate in the game, but he was outstanding. He was outstanding, and he's going to be way down on the list, and he probably is going to go in the fifth round, but could climb his way up to being a starter. So, Paul, I'll throw it to you because I know the tight end class has been one of your babies this past year, and I know you could speak to that more eloquently than I can.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes down to is I don't think this draft class has the elite top-level talent that we've been seeing over the last couple of years. You know, and what I mean by that is I honestly think you can have 7 to 9 names in consideration for the 1.01 pick. I know right now, if there was ever a draft right now, I would take Josh Jacobs because I love that talent. But if he ended up on a team that wasn't an ideal landing spot, you know, he's the only running back that's in play for me right now that I would consider. And then there's a whole bunch of wide receivers. I just don't think there's a lot differentiating these wide receivers right now. So I don't know if there's much difference between pick 4 and pick 9, or much difference between pick 6 and pick 14. Like I mentioned Deebo Samuel's range before. He might go top of the second round at like pick 14, and then N'Keal Harry or Hakeem Butler might go at pick 5 or 6. I give me Deebo Samuel at pick 14 over N'Keal Harry or Hakeem Butler at pick 5 or 6. So yeah. What I think it is I just don't think it has the guys. I feel like years pass, we could basically write in, you know, in stone, these are the 5 names or 4 names that are probably going to be at the top of the draft. We just kind of need to know the order in which they're going to go. I don't think we have any clarity right now in terms of who the 5 names are. I think people think it's going to be Josh Jacobs. It's going to be DK Metcalf, you know, mm-hmm. N'Keal Harry, you know, those guys. But I don't think that's definitive. I think, you know, a lot of it can go, you know, maybe, you know, I know my number one wide receiver is Calvin Harmon. Where does he end up? You know, so I think there's a lot of uncertainty, and that's kind of where people are saying it's a little bit of a down year. But like Matt mentioned, the tight end class, I love the tight end class. I think there's going to be 3 NFL tight end in the real NFL draft. I think there's going to be 3 first round tight ends potentially, or at least deserving. So the 2 guys from Iowa, Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson, and then Irv Smith Jr. out of Alabama. I think those guys are going to be great value, probably in the second round of most rookie drafts, you know, and I think all 3 of them. I know Hockenson reminds me of Hunter Henry. I think Irv Smith is a smaller version, but very similar to a OJ Howard in terms of his movement skills and his receiving ability. And then I think Noah Fant is very much like an Evan Ingram, not as refined a route runner, but not much of a blocker, mostly going to be a pass catcher, you know, line up detached or in the slot. But I think those 3 guys, and the tight end position is deep. It goes like 9-10 deep of guys who have a legitimate shot to be top 100 NFL picks. So they're probably going to be in that round 2, round 3, round 4 range. I think it's got good depth. I just think it's lacking that top end talent. So way back when you asked the question about trading draft picks for, you know, players, I'm always under the mindset, I don't love trading away draft picks for older veteran players, unless it's a really win now team. But my favorite thing to do is buy people who are 1 year out or 2 years out, who are a little bit under the radar that people are getting frustrated. I went out and bought Joe Mixon in 2 leagues last year, was willing to give up pick 6, pick 5, pick 7, like things like that for him. And I love that. This year, Dalvin Cook's going to be a guy who, if somebody wants, you know, pick 5 or pick 6 because they're more enamored with a new toy, a new rookie, I'll try to go in and get Dalvin Cook. Maybe a late first round, I'll try to get a guy like Phillip Lindsay or a wide receiver who I think could break out next year, like Dante Pettis, you know, especially if the 49ers don't do anything in free agency to invest in a wide receiver, you know, late first round picks, early second round picks. I think sometimes teams are willing to move guys to get another new toy for this year. And I love doing that, buying players off of their rookie year or off their second year.
Yeah.
And real quick, I'm going to cut you off, Michael.
Of course.
I've been talking for like 20 minutes, and this might be a record for the show.
Yeah, really?
It just kind of feels like to me, everyone's enamored with running backs right now, the position. So if there's not that, what they perceive as that stud running back, well, then it's a down class. But I do look at, and obviously I'm not as adept at this as Paul and Matt, but I look at a lot of these wide receivers, depending on landing spot, going, well, this guy could be a 1 in the league. It's just going to depend, you know, obviously if he ends up with the Rams, well, that's not good. But say AJ Brown, who's my crush, ends up with Indianapolis because they could use another receiver for, well, since we've all been alive. And I think they'll move up the board. And I also think part of the reason people say it's a down class is because they don't like hard decisions. They do want a clear cut. Like when Ezekiel Elliott was coming out, oh, I know who I'm picking last year. Oh, it's Saquon and Nick Chubb and Geis. You know, even though after Saquon, it was a little bit of choose your own fate or whatever it is, choose your own adventure. But you still knew that there were solid guys. I think there's really solid guys at wide receiver. I really do want to load up on first round picks. I got a feeling I'm going to end up trading some 2020s to get a bunch of receivers out of this class.
Mind you, he does that every year. That's no surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. And guys, he didn't say it, but he's fishing to hear what you guys have to say about AJ Brown. What do you guys think about AJ Brown?
You're going to have to push back you're going to have to push back the masses because he's not going to test that well at the combine. And there's a ready every year there's a guy who people just get down on and forget how good he was. People were down on Juju Smith his last year in college. And Matt and I had to fight back people and say, listen, he's still a really good player. Last year, Matt and I had to push back people when they wanted to worry about Calvin Ridley off of his combine because he only ran well but didn't jump like Calvin Ridley ever wins jump balls. That's not his game, and we had to push back.
Right.
A.J. Brown is not going to test well at the combine. But for me, he's my number two wide receiver. I got to go back and still watch a lot more of this year film, but he's going to be pretty close to that. Like, you know, he's going to be in that top four mix for me. I think his best position is he's a big slot. He's just how Juju Smith is best in Pittsburgh when he's inside. I think a team has to know what A.J. Brown is. If a team drafts him and thinks he's going to win vertically down the field outside all the time, then I think they're drafting someone and asking him to do something that doesn't cater to his strengths, you know, as a player. And then I think he could maybe not be effective. But if he's used in the right way, I think he could be very effective, and I'm a fan. And Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, I still believe you're all in on him as well, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, to kind of just jump off of what Paul was saying, I mean, I look back at my pre-draft or my preseason rankings on these college wide receivers, and I had A.J. Brown number one. I had Deebo Samuel would be my number two right now. N'Keal Harry would be my three. DK Metcalf would be my number four. Riley Ridley would have been five. Hunter Renfrow I had at six. And I had number seven, I had Anthony Johnson, Stanley Morgan at eight, Tyree Brady at nine. And then at number 10, I had Denzel Mims. I actually had Kelvin Harmon lower than almost everybody. I actually had him at 11.
Wow.
So a lot of that is because, again, I mean, this is me, and I'm going to be very candid. I mean, this was preseason, so there's a lot more to do to kind of figure out how these guys change and how they develop as players. And then the other thing is, and you'll hear me kind of say this on the show all the time, and it's something that I would kind of bring to the forefront. I mean, I'm really adopting more of what I would consider like a player problem solver paradigm. This idea that I don't really care necessarily what your athletic testing is. It's all about how you access that in real time, how you use it to solve problems on the field, how you can adapt yourself to the situations that are presented to you. And to go back to the previous comment, I mean, honestly, I'm going to be honest with you, Shane. I think that when you said, you know, it all matters where you land, I mean, isn't that the big trump card for all these guys? Because if you put them in a series of problems that they're just not adept at solving, then you're really creating a situation that doesn't really maximize their talent. And I think that to A.J. Brown's specifically, you know, if you misplace him, if you use him as an outside receiver, he's going to be effective as a flanker. You know, he'll be effective off the line of scrimmage as your secondary wide receiver to maybe another primary X receiver or wide receiver one. But he's really best utilized off the line of scrimmage, tight to formations, where he can use what he understands about what he can do as a route runner to create space and create separation. I mean, there was an argument that there was going on, not an argument, but there was a discussion about how the favorite play of Ole Miss, and this goes back to the idea that the Ole Miss offense is more of a run and shoot kind of air raid hybrid. And the idea was, you know, these guys in these offenses, what made the run and shoot so just lethal was that the premise of it was so beautiful. Like you said, basically the quarterback and the wide receiver are meant to read one another, see the same thing on the field, throw the football before they come out of their breaks, because the idea is both the quarterback and the receiver are adapting in the same fashion to the way the defense behaves. And the idea is no matter what you run, these guys can run their respective route, and the quarterback and the wide receiver would be perfectly on time with one another, hence creating this unbeatable situation. No matter what the defense does, no matter what you play, the receiver has a specific route. The quarterback knows it because he's so attuned to his wide receiver, and we can just win all the time. And the run and shoot was designed to do that. So in Ole Miss, man, A.J. Brown's number one route was get open. Then that's what they called it. And get open was all about, hey, listen, you know the route concept, AJ? You know what you can do? Get open. And there's a lot of complexity in that type of task. That's not easy because he's got to make sure his spacing relative to the other complementary routes isn't compromised. He's got to make sure he stays on time with his quarterback. He's got to make sure he's doing all those different things. That's not easy while reading the defense and adapting to whatever coverage they're playing. Because all these guys play these, like, you know, pattern match quarters coverage. You run in my zone, I run in your zone. We're going to pick you up, then I'm going to drop you off to this guy. He's got to adapt in real time to that. So to be able to do all that shows a tremendous, tremendous amount of problem-solving ability. I'll take the guy who can adapt over the guy who has specific skills every time. Hmm. Now, that's not to say that the league is wired that way. And I know that I'm putting myself on a limb. Like, how can Hunter Renfrow be number six? Because preseason, I thought he was one of the best problem solvers that were out there. And if you remember in the Senior Bowl, there was that scramble where Will Grier had a roll to his left, throw off his back foot and hit him. That was a scramble drill. And if you watch, I think Brad Kelly put out a great thing. I mean, Brad, I mean, I'm giving you a lot of pump here, man. I'm pumping your tires on this one because he caught it and I saw it and I loved it because it showed why Hunter Renfrow can be such an asset to a team. In a scramble drill, when everything breaks down, he was able to recognize it, get open, make the catch. That's the stuff that pushes teams across the finish line when it matters in championships. And I just think A.J. Brown brings that in spades. Hmm. I really do.
Well, then Hunter Renfrow, it's been a couple of years. Didn't he have the touchdown winning catch when Clemson came back a couple of years ago?
Yeah. But he's not fast enough.
Well, you know, it's funny. When we talk about all these players and you were just mentioning about the problem solving and everything, one of the things that Shane always talks about is that if you're not playing super flex, you know, you're not doing fantasy right. And a lot of people are doing their rookie picks and figuring out what they're going to do. Is there any quarterbacks in this draft that you guys would recommend people to go out there and grab? I mean, I know people talk about Kyler Murray, but he's like too short or this or that. I mean, is there any quarterbacks? I know Shane wanted to ask about, was it?
I think the obvious one that's going to go off the board first in most rookie drafts is probably Dwayne Haskins, because I can't imagine he gets past the Giants unless there's some significant trading going on. But I was wondering, you know, Drew Locke all of a sudden is the cream de la cream. And now, unfortunately, it looks like Denver's in love with him, which Elway scares me with picking quarterbacks. But what do you guys think of Locke?
Yeah, is there any quarterbacks out there that you think that people should be looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in here first. And I think the two, for fantasy perspective, is definitely Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray, if he so chooses, you know, the football path. And, you know, he ends up going in round one. I mean, Haskins is a guy that you look at him, really productive this year, you know, can make all the throws, has the arm talent. To me, he's kind of a blend between, you know, Ben Roethlisberger and Jameis Winston, you know, plays from the pocket, you know, young Ben and even Winston at times when needed had the athleticism and mobility to move around in the pocket, but they more use that size, you know, just to kind of move around, you know, fend the defender off, you know, just to give himself another second or so to throw. That's kind of what I think Dwayne Haskins is. You know, he can get the ball out really quickly, you know, all signs are that the intangible stuff is really good. Obviously, that's not stuff we can see on film. We can just kind of go by word of mouth on that. But I think he's squarely in the mix. He's going to be probably the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft. You know, I think in a super flex league, he's definitely should be in consideration, you know, somewhere in the first 6 to 8 picks. You know, if he did end up, as Shane was just saying, with the Giants, you know, and you kind of drop him in that offense with the weapons they have there, I think, you know, I think even earlier is possible. You know, I think he would have as much upside as some of the guys last year in terms of fantasy. So I think Haskins is very much going to be in the mix. I like him as a player. I think he warrants, you know, going in the top 10 of the NFL draft, you know, and in the top 10 of a super flex rookie draft. Kyler Murray is a wild card because if he chooses, you know, the football, he's a way better quarterback prospect than Lamar Jackson was. You know, we know and we saw what Lamar Jackson did down the stretch this year. He left a lot to be desired in terms of his passing ability, but we saw his rushing ability kind of carry him, you know, to probably, you know, low end QB1 to, you know, high end quarterback 2 stats in terms of fantasy. And I don't think Kyler Murray is going to be running anywhere near as much as Lamar Jackson did down the stretch. But Kyler Murray's got the arm talent to make every NFL throw. It's all about understanding, again, how to utilize him. It needs to be an offense that caters to his skill set. That's going to be, you know, moving the launch pad so he can throw, you know, and get on the move. Obviously, a lot of shotgun, you know, all that stuff is going to be how you kind of, you know, utilize Kyler Murray's skill sets. And the thing that I love about Murray the most is he doesn't look to take off and run like we've seen other really athletic quarterbacks do. He uses his athleticism as he keeps his eyes down the field, looking to make big plays. If you watch, you know, as much Kyler Murray as you can find on YouTube, you will see him constantly moving around the pocket, waiting for guys to get open, waiting for his skilled players. You know, I think that's a really important trait at the NFL level, that ability to play off structure. He can throw on the run. And he's similar to Russell Wilson in the fact he can throw from multiple arm angles. I guess it's that baseball background. He never seems to take a hit square on, you know, which is something like a guy like Robert Griffin always seemed like he was taking big hits. Russell Wilson never seems like he takes big hits once he gets on the move and in the open field. And that's kind of what Kyler Murray did as well when you watch him at Oklahoma. So I'm really intrigued by him. I could see a scenario in terms of fantasy that Kyler Murray gets taken before Dwayne Haskins if their NFL picks are pretty comparable, meaning they're both taken in the top 10 or top 15. And then I think it might be more landing spots. I do think Kyler Murray's upside in terms of fantasy could be a little bit higher because of the running component added in to the arm talent and the passing stats he might produce. And you mentioned about Drew Lock. Listen, very inconsistent in terms of his accuracy and playing off structure, but he's got elite arm talent. He can make every throw, but you're going to have to, you know, to me, a little bit more of a projection with him. You're really going on a couple raw traits and hoping he can harness them. And listen, Matt and I were big Josh Allen fans last year. I don't think Drew Lock is as good as Josh Allen. I don't think the arm talent is as good. It's close, but it's not as good. I don't think the athleticism is as good. The ability to make plays with his legs and throw on the run and play off structure, I thought Josh Allen did a little bit better than that. But Drew Lock is probably going to get pushed up the board and be off the board in the top 10 or top 12 picks as well with quarterback needy teams.
What about Daniel Jones? I know he had a terrible practice week at the Senior Bowl, and I don't think he actually looked much better during the game. What are your feelings on him? Is he someone that I think the NFL, from everything you're reading, it sounds like he's going to be a high draft pick, but do you think he's someone we should buy in on?
Matt, you want to jump in? You want me to get?
Yeah, no, I mean, my two cents is I think when you watch him, I think there's a lot of infatuation with Daniel Jones when it comes to the pedigree and background. I think the David Cutcliffe connection and what that means in terms of the pedigree of what he should understand at the pro level and the way he should be able to immediately step in from a responsibility standpoint is going to be very intriguing. And I think that that can't be overstated, because I think that on some level, I do think teams are going to enjoy the idea that you have a player who has a professional background at his respective position in terms of, you know, terminology, in terms of understanding the playbook, in terms of studying the playbook, the preparation process, what he needs to do. They're going to expect that in spades to come from Daniel Jones. I will say that I think at the Senior Bowl, and I haven't had a chance to watch all the quarterbacks, so Daniel Jones was one of those guys that I have to go back to and watch a little bit more thoroughly. So I'll pass it over to Paul for a little bit of that in terms of what he saw. But from the Senior Bowl part of it, I watched him. There were a lot of errant passes. He did not look comfortable in what he was trying to do. I think there were moments where he was trying to push the ball down the field into windows that I thought were not entirely bad. It's just that you could see that there was that disconnect, obviously, with the receivers. And I understand that that's part of the process. It's part of that problem solving process that we do want to see. So if we're going to take that lens, then we should be really interested in seeing what he does. But in the same respect, I didn't see the same type of touch, anticipation, things that I would have wanted to see, you know, poise inside the pocket that I would have wanted to see from a player. That's not to say he can't rise up boards. It's not to say that we don't have this, you know, discussion again a week from now after I had a chance to watch more of it and say that I feel something different. But I will say on the hoof off of what I saw at the Senior Bowl, I think that people are going to be intrigued what he brings off the field more to a locker room and to a preparation process at the position than maybe what he brings in terms of actual level of skill right now. And I think that teams will draft that.
On the field, arm talent wise, athleticism wise, to me, he reminds a lot of some combination of like a Ryan Tannehill or Blake Bortles in terms of he is athletic. He can move. He can make plays with his legs. He can throw on the run. He's got great size, but he doesn't combine that with elite arm talent. I think his arm talent is above average to good. I think people are going to look at that athleticism, look at that arm talent, and even if they see glimpses of Ryan Tannehill or Blake Bortles, they're going to then go with what Matt just said and think the intangible stuff is maybe what held Ryan Tannehill back, held Blake Bortles back to living up to their potential. And I think there's going to be NFL teams that think they can pull that out of, you know, Daniel Jones because of the tutelage he's had by David Cutcliffe, because of everything that you hear about him that, you know, on the whiteboard and stuff like that, like he's Peyton Manning, like, and that's some of the stuff that's been thrown out there. But I think on the field, if you really just hold them to that, it's a lot of Ryan Tannehill, Blake Bortles like play, you know, than a guy who should still be in consideration for top 10 picks. I don't think anyone would think if you redo it, Ryan Tannehill or Blake Bortles should be top 12 picks in the in an NFL draft. But I do think he's probably going to get pushed up the board and still be gone in the first 15, first 20 picks.
The Jaguars immediately, and I probably mispronounced Jaguars, but I'm pretty sure they immediately regretted that pick. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, you got a hint of, like, oh, what did we just do after that Bortles pick?
They didn't immediately think that way. But listen,
I'm pretty sure they did.
You know, it's funny. We still obviously have the combine and we have the draft, and there's so many different things that can happen over the next couple of months. Yeah. For right now, say you guys, if you had to draft right now in a Superflex League, who would you say is the 1.01? I mean, I know there's a lot of names that we threw around here talking tonight, but there are people out there that are trying to get a handle of things. And is there anybody out there that you, either one of you two guys, believe should be the 1.01 in your draft right now?
If I had to go off the cuff, assuming that he doesn't play baseball and he plays football, I'll go with Kyler Murray for my guy, just because I think that what he brings in the cheat code that is the running game, not to say that he will do that, but the cheat code that is the NFL running game, if he is used in a spread offense with RPO style concepts where he can kind of go off structure, have the freedom to gain some yards after catch. I saw him play at Texas A&M. I left that game at Texas A&M where he played. Kyler Murray was his first game, and he was all the hoopla surrounding the Texas star. I've never seen a more elusive runner at any position at that time than I saw at a Kyler Murray. He is that agile in the open field as a player. So to think that, like Paul said, he doesn't get hit squarely because people can't hit him squarely. He's that sensitive to what's going on. He's that aware of it. I think he's a good runner at the next level. So I would take a shot because I think he's going to go pretty high and he'll be expected to start. He would be my.
I'll take that advice that you guys talking about these players that create for themselves and do these things that I wouldn't say are intangibles, but they play in a way that gives them an opportunity to play NFL football. And I listen to guys like you and knowledgeable football people more than I listen to the fantasy community guys, because I think you get a lot of insight about players and how those things may translate for those players, you know, when they get to the NFL. So those kinds of things that you guys mentioned make a lot of sense to me. Jarrett Stidham, I think, is my third quarterback out of all these guys. Haskins, Murray, then Stidham, as far as a pro prospect. Now, I don't know if that's how it'll shake out. I don't know how well teams like him or how he's going to do, but I like him better than Locke, Jones, Greer, and the rest of the guys. I've liked him for a long time. I own him. Hopefully, I think it's just confirmation bias because I own him in so many places in Debbie leagues that I want him to be good, but he's still like the third for me. Do you guys see him as, I know we talked a little bit about him, but as a pro prospect, as an NFL quarterback, you know, developing, you know, do you guys see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think his natural, you know, arm talent is probably the best in the class in terms of, you know, natural, you know, motion. This looks so natural. To me, in the summer when we watched him, I said he was this year's version of Josh Rosen. You watch Josh Rosen when you watch his film, And when he was at UCLA, everything was very fluid and very natural for people, you know, who are older. Remember, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. in baseball, his swing was just very natural, always very easy. Didn't look like he was ever putting much on it. And that's kind of how Josh Rosen was. And that, to me, that's how Jared Stidham was. Like, he just had a very, you know, it's not elite arm talent. I think it's probably good to very good. He can make every NFL throw, but he's got like perfect release, really good, you know, upper body mechanics. I think this year, just the lack of offensive line, the offense that he was asked to run, Matt and I have talked about it so many times that he just made a really poor choice going to Auburn, you know, and the offense that Gus Malzahn wants to run there did not cater to his skill set. But I do think, you know, and there have been some reports out there that he did impress teams, you know, down there at the Senior Bowl and maybe potentially push himself back into day two consideration. And there was a while where he kind of fell off the map this year that right. I think more people were kind of thinking maybe round four, you know, day three, maybe he should go back to school. But going back to school and being in that offense wouldn't have helped his draft stock at all. Right. So Matt and I have been saying for weeks that the Senior Bowl was potentially his most important week of his life in terms of his future, you know, future right. professional career, because he had to go down there and win some teams over. And reports are that he looked pretty good. I think his, you know, I don't think there's a huge gap. There's going to be a bigger gap in terms of where they get picked mm-hmm. between him, Drew Locke, and Daniel Jones. And I think on the if you're just evaluating pure traits alone, I think those guys are all very close to each other. And I could totally understand anybody having Stidham ahead of those two guys, because on natural traits alone, I do think he's right up there, if not better than those guys. But how he performed these last 2 years at Auburn is going to hurt him a little bit, you know, in the draft eyes world, I think. So I think I don't think you're crazy for having him where you do, because I do think if he lands in the right situation, you know, to me, he goes to a team that kind of has an established starter like the Chargers or something like that, and he just waits it out a year or two, you know, and then steps in. I know Pittsburgh took Mason Rudolph last year, but even in a situation like that where maybe a guy's got a couple years left and then Stidham kind of learns the pro scheme again, you know, and back to that, I think he's got the talent to eventually be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Back to the other question, though, Paul, who would you have as the 1.01?
For me, it's Josh Jacobs right now, and it's him. The only other guy in consideration right now would be Calvin Harmon, the wide receiver out of NC State. But I would take Josh Jacobs, and part of it is I think the wide receiver class – like I said before, like I could have 1.01, and maybe if you have 1.01, you have 2.01. I'm not sure there's a gaping difference between the wide receiver I'm going to get at 2.01 and taking Calvin Harmon at 1.01. I like Calvin Harmon. On the field, he reminds me of healthy, really productive Hakeem Nicks with some Davante Adams before Davante Adams really has blown up over the last few years. I think he's really good, you know, on those back shoulder throws, fades in the end zone, stuff like that. He's not an elite athlete. So early in the year, some people wanted to kind of say he was more like a Julio Jones type athlete. Julio's a freak athletically. That's not Calvin Harmon, but I think he could be a really good player in that kind of mold. But for me, it's Josh Jacobs. And all year I kept watching him, and Matt and I would go on air and I was like, we would talk about guys, and Alabama is always so many guys to talk about. And I'd be like, every week, Josh Jacobs is really impressing me. Josh Jacobs, you know, and then as the year went on, I think it was Dane Brugler was the first guy who writes for The Athletic, who does a great job. And he started to say, like, Josh Jacobs, there are people in the NFL that think this guy could be a first round talent. He's the guy that's intriguing teams the most in terms of the offensive prospects, you know, at Alabama. And then I really started to watch him more. And then I did, you know, a full film eval on him, and then, you know, watched him closely in those playoff games. You know, he's very unique in terms of what he does, because he basically, there's no area where he doesn't check the boxes off. And that's what really intrigues me. You know, the NFL, you need to be versatile. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's got good hands. He can line up in the slot and run routes. So he can do that element of the game. He can win, you know, in space, make people miss with his agility and quickness, but also with just running people over. He finishes runs really aggressively. You know, he can run between the tackles. He can run outside. So I think he can do everything and win with power and speed. You know, so he's kind of like, I like him more than any running back last year, not named Saquon Barkley. And there was a couple other running backs last year. I was really big, you know, I was a big fan of Sony Michel, but I think Jacobs is quicker, more athletic than Michel, and a better pass catcher than Michel. I loved Kerryon Johnson a lot last year, but I think Jacobs is a little bit more athletically and a little bit better of a receiver than him. You know, he finishes, you know, like Sony Michel or Nick Chubb, but he's got more receiving ability and speed and quickness. He's kind of a blend between Mark Ingram's finishing ability and Alvin Kamara's like speed and athleticism. Not at the high end of Alvin Kamara, but somewhere in between there athletically is a little bit of both of those guys. And I think that makes for a really intriguing prospect that I'm really excited to kind of see where he lands. And, you know, I think he's going to be, by the time the most rookie drafts happen, I have a feeling DK Metcalf is going to settle in as the 1.01, but I think Josh Jacobs is the guy I'd be pushing for.
And not to interrupt, but I just wanted to mention, I totally misheard your question. I thought I had to choose a quarterback.
No, it was just that it was a super flex league.
I was like, Josh Jacobs. I was like, wow, he must feel really stupid saying a running back when he asked for a quarterback. Little do I know that somebody else wasn't paying attention, and that would be me. So, I think in a super flex league, and again, are we assuming two QBs, right? Like you could have a QB.
Correct.
I still think Kyler Murray would be in my world for top five if he does go quarterback. But I do think that to ignore a player like Paul said of Josh Jacobs' ability, I would be hard pressed not to take a player like him. Okay. Why? Just because of the plug and play mentality that could go with it. But I could tell you that I'm not too far off with Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray would settle in if he decides to play football. He would probably settle in where I'd be hard pressed not to take him in the top five. So not too far off. I would settle in right there and say he is the cheat code at the position, could be that cheat code guy. I love DK Metcalf, and I know he's prepared to settle in at number one. I agree with Paul on this. But to me, Josh Jacobs has the skill right now. DK needs development, and I think that that is going to be something that I would consider when I'm choosing who I want. Give me the guy with the most depth and breadth of skill right now, as opposed to the guy that has to have a development curve. That's why I would take those guys over them. So that would just be my personal standpoint. So I apologize for Paul, he didn't say running back. He said quarterback.
No,
Josh Jacobs is going to convert to quarterback.
Yeah,
and that's right.
Well, Kyler Murray, the one thing you know, any team that's drafting him high, you know they have to be building that offense around him. You know, they're not going to – there's no way you can – ask him to play a traditional quarterback role like they used to do in the old days. I'm old enough to remember when a quarterback didn't take shotgun, or if he took all shotgun snaps in college, that it was a bad thing. And now they just steal everything from college football, from RPOs, air raid, spread, and it's more fun. God, it's so much more fun. But yeah, so whoever drafts him, you know that offense is getting tailor-made to him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't help draw up some of the plays.
Well, you know, and it's really cool. Thank you, Paul, for going back to that, because, yeah, what we did ask about was Superflex. But so it looks like between the two of you guys are both on the same page with taking Josh Jacobs as number one.
Just real quick, though, where the hell was Josh Jacobs up until this year?
Well, and that's the whole point of all this Devy stuff. You know, we talk about it. You know, we actually didn't ask you guys. What type of fantasy leagues do you guys play in? Do you guys play in Devy leagues? Do you guys play in, or do you not play in any fantasy at all and you just talk about Devy stuff? What do you guys do?
We play one. I play one on TV, but I don't actually, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, listen, we've actually had guests that have told us, oh, I don't play fantasy. See, I only talk about it, you know.
We have
no, yes, you know what? Listen, I have whittled down my leagues kind of significantly. But Devy, yes, I play in two styles of Devy leagues, one where there's a very significant and deep college draft, one where there's only a one round draft every year. So it's a Devy dynasty league, and then one, like I said, is very much a deep dynasty kind of, like, we bring our players up, those are the guys you're responsible for. So two Devy leagues and then one dynasty league. And that's really about it for me. So that's where I kind of settle in right now.
Paul?
Yeah. So for me, I do about a couple of redraft leagues every year. one Devi league, and then really I hone in on dynasty leagues. So I have about four or five of them, and they are really deep, a couple of them, like 45, 50 players deep, full IDP, you know, six, seven man taxi squads. So like we have like, you know, 16 teams in one, 14 in another. So like our rookie drafts are like seven, eight rounds deep at that, at, you know, at 14, 16 teams. So every rookie's getting taken, UDFAs, like round six, round seven guys, you know. So I really enjoy the dynasty component. Those are my favorite leagues. I always like to have, you know, at least some stake in the game in a Devi league. And I do enjoy just the traditional redraft leagues, especially the ones that have been going on forever. And then I'll dabble in daily, you know, a little bit, but in New York, the college component of it is not something that is no longer accessible. So it's only the daily side, the pro game.
Well, that, you know, I want to say for me personally, I know a lot of our listeners are really happy to hear this show because a lot of people were confused and not sure about this draft class. And I think after having you two guys on here talking about some of these players, I know there's people out there that will feel better about some of their rookie picks or be at least a little bit more excited to go into this draft.
I just don't want them to be because I'm fine taking a bunch of these.
Whatever. We know what you want to do with all your trades. But listen, guys, one of the things we are looking to do later on in the next month or so is try to do a couple rookie things. And we would love for you guys to come back if you'd like just to do a rookie draft with us and try to get a feel for what people should be doing. And if you'd like to come back, we'd love to have you. You guys were great guests, and we really appreciate you guys coming on tonight.
As long as I'm prepared to answer the right question at the right time and not make it up as I go along. You know, I should be good. I promise I'll have my listening ears on.
Just give Matt the first pick in that draft, but don't even tell him. He might think it's super flex again, so he might just take Kyler Murray, but let's make it a one quarterback only draft.
TJ Hockenson.
We'll be very specific on what we're doing, but no, and listen, that's how we do this show. So I think you did a great job in what you did. And is there anything you guys want to promote or say before we go? Yeah.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to thank you guys really for having us on, because I can tell you that it really is just a pleasure to be able to sit down with people that are just passionate about it too, just like us, and just be able to just to talk ball and have a good time. And I can't really say enough how much of a privilege it was for us to really be on. So I mean, I know I speak for Paul on that note, but I'm gonna throw it over to him as well, because he also does a way better spot on what we have to offer as well. So he will talk a little bit about that too. But gentlemen, really, thank you so much. I really, really, really appreciate it. It's so much fun to do this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'll just chime in there. Yeah, I know Matt and I were super excited. We were talking today, you know, at work, that this is the first time we were asked to come on a pod together. We've made a lot of individual spots, but we had never been, you know, asked to come on together. So we were really excited for it. So thank you for that opportunity. For people who listen to us, or, you know, after listening to us tonight, are interested in our work, please make sure you subscribe to the Saturday to Sunday Football podcast. If you're interested in seeing our scouting reports, our rankings, if you head over to SaturdaySundayFootball.com and click on the premium content tab, you can buy our premium notebooks for $9.99. You get access to all four notebooks. You get our scouting notebook, which we, you know, it's going to have about 30 wide receiver profiles, 30 running back profiles, 20 tight end, and 15 quarterbacks, you know, strengths, weaknesses, how they win, NFL role, NFL projection, scheme fit, all that stuff. We're just in the process of adding more. It'll be continually updated. It's been out since August, and we just keep adding to it and editing and updating. We just are in the process of splitting it into the draft tabs, and then the guys who didn't declare, you know, those guys we kind of put in separate tabs. You also get our rankings notebook, which has our draft eligible rankings, which we base on film. We soon will release our tiers for this rookie class. You also get our Devi rankings and then our dynasty rookie rankings as well after the draft. And then in March, you get access to the freshman notebook, which will have about 40 player profiles on the top 40 incoming freshmen that Matt is already scouting and studying hard on. And then in April, you get the draft projections notebook, which has a tab for every position, offense and defense, for how we expect it to go on draft night, not our feel, but you know, gathering all the resources I can, all the metrics, you know, notes on every single player, and then a tab on who I project to go in the first round, the first 100 picks, and then every pick in the entire NFL draft. You get all of them for $9.99. It is the best way to help Matt and I and support the show.
And I actually just got that over the weekend. Not just because they were going to be on, but that was part of, like, you know what? I've been listening to their podcasts for, I don't know, at least 2 years.
30 years.
Yeah,
yeah, forever.
So like, hey, maybe I should actually help these guys out besides the download. So I bought that. I'm excited to start digging into that after I finish one of my other off-season readings. but definitely, if you don't follow their show, I'd highly suggest it. They get you very hype over things you didn't even think you'd be hype about, like the Shrine Bowl. You're like, no, this is great because there's this one guy that might be really good. They put on an excellent show. It's one of my favorites, no doubt. I love it.
I agree. Thank and, you so know, much. Especially having you guys on tonight, it really helped. It really helped me, and I'm sure it helped a lot of our listeners. So thank you very much for coming on, and we really appreciate it. And everybody go check out their website, Saturday 2, SundayFootball.com. And listen, we would love to have you guys back, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely come back. Looking forward to it.
Cool. And while we leave you guys, we're going to go into, we have gtbets.eu that's going to talk about some of the stuff for betting, even though, we got the Super Bowl this weekend.
Oh, we got the Super Bowl, drop like $1,000 on there, bet every prop bet. And just make sure you use our promo code.
Yeah, so check out GT.
I hope you win.
Yeah, gtbets.eu. Here it comes.
Are you looking for some action on today's games? Then head over to gtbets.eu for all your sports betting needs. Get up-to-date odds covering all major sports. gtbets.eu is easy to use. Their simple registration process will have you placing your first bet in minutes. And if you register today, you can earn up to $500 of free money. Now that's a great reason to head over to gtbets.eu, an official sponsor of the Dynasty Football Factory. Simply add Dynasty Trades HQ in the referred by field to earn a 100% welcome bonus. gtbets.eu, it's game time.
Well, Jeremy left, so I'll go ahead and bid everybody adieu on Jeremy's behalf. And thanks for listening. And remember, become a patron because patrons are cooler.
Absolutely. And check out our Twitter account at Dynasty Trades HQ.
And make sure you hit dynastyfootballfactory.com.
Absolutely. You'll find all the links to all of our podcasts, also all of our written content. And, we just came out of the gtbets.eu and our guests hung up, but also Jeremy did too. So
I think Jeremy went to go gamble. He's going to lay some bets down. So he was like, screw this, I'm out.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the show and we will talk to you guys next. Oh, wait, go over to our iTunes account and give us a rate and review. Shane's always happy about that, you know? So we'll talk to you guys next week. Shane, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Shane.
See you guys later. Thanks.
Peace.